You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this installment of Fired Up. Maybe over a half hour, maybe not. I'm a little bit pressed for time, but we'll see how far this dot connecting mission goes. So, in recent news stories, I've seen that this girl named Jamie Kloss or Close. So I had heard about this story before she was found. So some random guy who it looks like she doesn't have any relation to came in, killed her parents, kidnapped her, and she was held captive for 3 months and then escaped somehow and notified some old lady walking her dog and said, "I'm Jamie Close, the person everyone's been looking for." I guess she just assumed everyone had been looking for her. Maybe she saw it on the news. I don't know. And then they rescued her and found this guy and everything. So when I first heard about this, you know, I believed it because bad stuff happens all the time. But then I thought about it and I thought, okay, you know, it's pretty rare that someone is just randomly attacked. It's usually someone they know. So, you know, that doesn't totally rule it out. But just seeing the media coverage that this is getting, it reminds me of the whole Elizabeth Smart thing and the Casey Anthony trial and all of these things that get blown up by the media. And I'm just thinking, okay, so how many children go missing every single day? Not to excuse this if it really happened, but why is this case being so focused on? And it's just interesting. So here's the Daily Mail article. It says, "Exclusive inside the squalid basement cell, strewn with stuffed toys and filthy sheets, where Jamie Close, 13, spent 88 days as the prisoner of a 21-year-old loner in a cabin in the Wisconsin woods." So I guess the Patterson is the 21-year-old man's name, and he lived at an isolated woodland home until he was arrested by authorities on Friday. So, I mean, yeah, this very well could be real. But it's just kind of weird that it's getting so much media attention. And it made me think of the, like I said, the Elizabeth Smart case, which looks to me like that might be a psyop as well. I don't know if you guys remember that one. So to just remind you, in case you forgot about the Elizabeth Smart thing, I don't know if it was as big in other countries, obviously, as it was here, because it, you know, supposedly happened here. But so she was kidnapped. This is the official story. At age 14 on June 5th, 2002, by Brian David Mitchell from her home in the Federal Heights neighborhood of Salt Lake City, Utah. She was held captive by Mitchell and his wife, Wanda Barzee, on the outskirts of Salt Lake City, and then later in San Diego County, California. Her captivity lasted approximately 9 months before she was discovered in Sandy Hook, Utah, approximately 18 miles from her home. So apparently she was taken from her home at knife point by Mitchell while her younger sister, Mary Catherine, pretended to be asleep. Okay. It's just weird. Like, I guess he just crawled in through her window or something. I don't know. Mitchell, who claimed to be a religious preacher, held Smart at a camp in the woods with Barzee, where he repeatedly raped her during her captivity. Smart accompanied her captors in public on various occasions and went largely unrecognized by those in the same contact that she came in contact with. So now she's, you know, doing TED Talks, and she's an advocate for missing persons and sexual trauma and all that. Now, this guy that apparently kidnapped her, I'll read to you a little bit about his background, and it's just interesting that they had her in burkas and everything. He must be a white Sharia guy. So Smart's main abductor, Brian David Mitchell, was born on October 18th, 53, in Salt Lake City, the third of six children in a Mormon family. His mother was a teacher, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so where does it talk about? Yes. He apparently joined the Hare Krishna commune. He had a long history of alcohol and drug abuse, blah de blah de blah. So there's not too much on the internet at all of people questioning the validity of these stories. And now I don't doubt that things like this happen all the time. Children are kidnapped and stolen. And yes, this happens all the time. I even have some stats that I'll read to you later. But why are these ones focused on by the media? Now, I think the overall agenda, if these are PSYOPs, would be to get parents to microchip their children. Because, I mean, we'll see. I don't know if it's going to come out soon with these statements, but people might be saying, you know, if those parents had only just microchipped their children, then they would know where they are, and she would have been rescued before, you know, all that terrible stuff could have happened to her. And it's just that slippery slope yet again. So according to this here, around 800,000 kids go missing each year in the United States, and many are never seen again. So that's around 2,000 each and every day. You could say a 9/11 happens to children each day of the year in the USA. Yet these stories were more important than the 1,999 others. Some bloggers online have even speculated that they, now this is going over to Casey Anthony, I'm sure you guys remember that case as well, happened here in Florida. Was Casey Anthony trial a propaganda coup to destroy the Fifth Amendment? So let's just read a little bit about this real quick. From the start, I wondered why so much attention was given to this one particular case when sadly so many children are killed every day in America. Was it simply media profiteering as they do off of the misery of others, or was there something more sinister afoot? Has the media been actively engaged in a propaganda campaign to condition Americans to accept, nay, to demand a law that would be tantamount to repeal, to a repeal of a key right outlined in the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America? Seems far-fetched, I suppose, on the one hand, but we have to accept that the mainstream media are whores who do willingly engage in propaganda to shift public opinion on any number of issues, ideas, products, etc. We also have to accept that this country has gone to hell in a handbasket these past years. I don't think it is an accident or a coincidence. Now let's pretend for a minute that we led a group of powerful people bent on the destruction of liberty and the Constitution in order to establish a fascist oligarchy or some such tyrannical form of government. This is not imaginary. There are powerful people in the world who seek to destroy America. You know this. The next goal on your agenda is the destruction of the Fifth Amendment clause, which bars self-incrimination, which will then open the door to forced confessions and torture of citizens. How would you achieve that goal? You can't do it overtly, because the people would never stand for an open repeal of the Fifth Amendment. So you would have to do it covertly, conspiring with your allies in government and media. There is a term known as the problem-reaction solution, which has been employed by the powerful against the interests of the people for longer than you can imagine, which is a surefire way of covertly achieving such a goal. Basically, it is a sleight-of-hand magic trick that you can pull on the public. All right, so I'll read about this a little bit more, but it's just interesting because she was so obviously guilty in this case, right? If it was even real, and she got away free. So people are just pissed about it. You know, like how could she get away with murdering that baby? She didn't report her child missing for 31 days. She should at least get charged with neglect. So, you have people outraged, rightly so, if that was real. I mean, that's disgusting. It was so obviously she was involved. Okay. So step one problem. Our problem, imagining again now that we are the would-be dictators, is that the Fifth Amendment stands in the way of our goals. But we need to create a problem that will attract the attention to the people. In the geopolitical scheme and in military operations, the old false flag attack is often employed as the opening salvo of a problem reaction solution campaign. Before our ultimate goal here in destroying the right to not self-incriminate, sorry, I gotta zoom in. Let us take advantage of a social problem that we have no intention of actually solving. We don't have to create the problem when we can take advantage of one which already exists, or one that we had created earlier through a wide array of socioeconomic conditions which spawns criminals in the first place. The neglect and murder of children in America always a tug at the heartstrings of decent people everywhere. We will call in support from our friends in the courts to find the perfect case that will solicit maximum emotional response from the public. Covertly, we will set the stage for a predetermined outcome. Then our friends in the media will bombard American living rooms and break room tables with specifically selected images and details of this one particular tragedy. The media will sell the story to the public, vilify the defendant in the worst ways possible to garner public support for the government, and leave the people believing that there is only one possible outcome for justice to prevail. All right, step two, reaction. We want the public to be shocked, absolutely outraged, to the point where they will throw all logic out the window, to the point where they themselves would do murder. A completely malleable emotional mob, frenzied like a stampede that with a little nudge we could drive right off a cliff if we choose to. And how do we solicit this reaction? By denying the public the only possible outcome, by letting Casey Anthony go free. Maybe we knew she was innocent all along and that the justice system would work just fine to exonerate her. Or maybe really she was guilty and our friend the prosecutor deliberately bungled the case. It doesn't matter. Our goal has been achieved. The lives of a few individuals is inconsequential to master manipulators who wipe out hundreds of thousands of innocent people with a simple pen stroke, declaration of war, carpet bombing campaign, etc. So the case is relevant other than how it can be used to serve our goals. He's pretending to be a piece of shit. Okay. Which, of course, is why this particular case, among many thousands of dead children, is being tried in the court of public opinion. Step three, solution. We wanted to destroy the Fifth Amendment clause, which prevents self-incrimination. Now the public by the millions demand a law that will do just that, all in the name of one little girl. The public has been tricked into believing that giving up their own rights, that undermining a primary tenet of justice and liberty, is somehow a good thing. It satisfies the bloodlust of some who want to see people imprisoned no matter what a court can prove. It satisfies the naive notions of others that such a law might actually save someone's life. Kaylee's law will not save anyone. Kaylee was the daughter of Casey Anthony. Instead, it will open the door to persecution and torture of innocents. And just because you supported Kaylee's law will not make you immune from the system coming after you next. After all, it was we the people who they were after all along. Our rights. We are the threat to their power. Still sounding far-fetched? Don't believe me that there is a nefarious cabal out to take away our fundamental rights as Americans and human beings? Well, you should not be so stupid. Okay, I'm going to go on. Kaylee Anthony is the poster child for justice gone awry, all right. She is the face of the little girl who convinced Americans to sell themselves out. But Captain Six, how will Kaylee's law violate the Fifth Amendment, you ask? Well, let me go ahead and pull a quote here from my previous article on the matter. If Casey Anthony were guilty of any crime whatsoever involving the death of her daughter, requiring her to report her daughter missing to police would be a violation of her Fifth Amendment rights, which protect her against self-incrimination. That doesn't mean a self-incrimination of murder either. It could have been something as simple as misdemeanor charge or unlawfully dealing with human remains or being high on marijuana at the time of Kaylee's disappearance or death, even if she was not present. Therefore, the only time this proposed law could be applied in accordance with the tenets of the Constitution of the United States is if you first proved that the parent guardian was in fact innocent of all other crimes related in any way to the disappearance of the child. And of course, then a person who had done nothing else wrong whatsoever is the last person you would actually want to send to prison for not reporting their child missing. At the end of the day, though, it is just a conspiracy theory, I suppose. I can't say for sure if this was ever an intentional plot against the Constitution. Not that the Constitution even friggin' matters anymore. They do not follow it. But they need to normalize all of this. So I really do feel that this was a psyop. It was blown up. I mean, they even had the trial. Like, you can watch it on YouTube. Like, it's a movie. I thought that cameras weren't allowed in courtrooms, but I guess that's not a thing. Okay. The writing of a new law is no inconsequential thing. Its impact far exceeds its immediately stated aims. Law is not a linear X equals Y concept. It is an ongoing chess match in which hangs the balance of liberty over tyranny, the rights of mankind over the privilege of a few. So I just thought that was pretty interesting. Casey Anthony, Elizabeth Smart, and now, you know, possibly this Kelsey Close incident. It's all just strange to me that these individuals are so focused on by the media when you have, what, 2,000 children going missing a day or something like that? It's insane. And of course, now you have Elizabeth Smart responding to Jamie Close's safe return. So let's see if we can hear some of this.
Well, the David Kloss case is eerily similar to one nearly 17 years ago. Elizabeth Smart was abducted.
Eerily similar. It's almost like they're supposed to be eerily similar.
When she was just 14 years old. Sean Gallagher is live with more. Sean, the commonalities are incredible.
As we continue to learn more about the Jamie Kloss case, the big thing she shares in common with Elizabeth Smart, they both came out of this alive. Barron County Sheriff Chris Fitzgerald even drew comparisons between the cases. In November, he said he had a gut feeling Jamie was still alive, using the Smart case as motivation. Smart was taken from her parents' home in Salt Lake City in June of 2002. For 9 months, her story captivated...
I just saw a big butterfly on the wall. That's interesting.
...the country, desperate to find her alive. As with Jamie... Everyone's prayers were answered when she was found alive in 2003. While Jamie Kloss will surely have both her mental and physical health closely monitored over the coming weeks, Elizabeth Smart will serve as an example that she can continue to survive. Here she is in an interview with today's TMJ4 from 2017, her words having special meaning today.
It's really important for people to share their stories because the truth is that it happens everywhere. We really have such limited control over what happens to us, but we do have control over what we do next, no matter
what. I'm getting the Baha'i faith vibes here. Like, we have no control over if we're kidnapped and raped at any moment, but it's how we handle it after.
What happens, you can find happiness again, and you can move forward, and you can go on to have a wonderful life.
Elizabeth Smart also took to Instagram this morning, sharing this photo of Jamie Kloss and an accompanying post. She said, in part, "What a miracle. Jamie Kloss has been found." She continued, "What a brave, strong, and powerful survivor. Whatever other details may surface, the most important will still remain that she is alive."
Okay, so that's that. Now, I came across a video that I found pretty interesting, and it's pretty compelling. So I'm going to explain to you some of the images here. Now, some of you will also remember the Natalie Holloway case. And they're pictured with Casey Anthony is a woman who looks very similar to Natalie Holloway. And they're just kind of partying together. Also, someone that looks very similar to Elizabeth Smart hanging out with Casey Anthony. They also show a picture of Casey Anthony with a man who appears to be Scott Peterson. He was another one of these big cases blown up by the media. I guess he's on death row now for killing his wife and unborn child. Kind of reminds me of this whole Chris Watts case that's going on as well. Now, I don't know if this is really Scott Peterson. I mean, it kind of looks like him, but the person doing this video is claiming it is him. So I don't know. And Casey Anthony and O.J. Simpson are buddies now. They were even going to do a reality show together, but I guess it never panned out. So there's pictures of them hanging out together, too. All right, now back to Natalie Holloway. That was another one of these big cases that was blown up here. She was apparently murdered by this Joran van der Sloot, some Dutch man. Then he also apparently killed Stephanie Flores Ramirez, a young Peruvian, by smothering her with his bloodied shirt so she would not be able to go to the police. Okay. Well, this is what he apparently said. Listen to this. "I'm going to kill you, you little mongoloid." this seems just fake to me. So friggin' fake. So yeah. Okay. Now back to this video here. There are pictures of Natalie Holloway with her friends, right? In 2005. And a girl next to her looks like she could be this Stephanie Ramirez. Like, they were just buddies. I mean, they would hang out. Now, I don't know. I mean, sometimes people just look alike. But just interesting that Natalie Holloway was apparently killed by this van der Sloot guy. Stephanie Ramirez was apparently killed by him as well. And she's pictured next to this girl that looks very similar to Stephanie. And he said, "I'm going to kill you, you little mongoloid." Yeah. How would they even know that? Like, I guess he confessed. "Hey, I just want to let you guys know that when I was killing that person, I called them a mongoloid. So make sure you put that in the news. Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm a racist white man." Now, in that same group photo, there is a woman who looks very similar to this Suzanne Powell. So Suzanne Powell was an American missing person from West Valley City, Utah. Her disappearance and presumed murder, as well as subsequent investigation and events, garnered significant media report. Or, sorry, attention. Okay, now another girl in the photo with them. She looks very similar to one of these apparent victims of, it says faces of the Norway victims, so I'm assuming this is the Anders Breivik psyop. So we've got all these girls looking like they're appearing in different hoaxes. I don't know if it's 100% match, but definitely looks similar. This researcher is also arguing that Natalie Holloway is actually Efrat Schwarzman, who was apparently killed in a suicide bombing in Israel, so another hoax. I mean, I could see it a bit. This Natalie Holloway has blonde hair, but you can dye her hair blonde. She also has heavy eyeliner on. So, I mean, I don't know. They're able to do this kind of stuff. So this brings me to an article on Fox News, Microchips, the New Surrogate Parents. Let's look at this. Okay. So, from little ones prone to running off in crowds to big kids hitting the road for the first time, a bunch of new devices claim to help parents keep an eye on their children, even when they're not around. The most controversial of these gadgets is an under-the-skin personal location device from Applied Digital Solutions. Using global positioning satellite technology, a microchip surgically implanted in the body finds children and notifies parents of their whereabouts. Ads say the device, which is the size of a wristwatch face and may become even smaller, could be used to find kidnapped children, locate young kids who wander away from parents, and track teens who participate in at-risk behavior. Casalotto, I guess he's the Verichip guy, says Verichip, $200 plus $9.95 a month. I love how they have the frickin' advertisement in there, too. For just $200 plus an additional $9.95 a month, an under-the-skin tamper-proof method of identifying one person against another could help prevent kidnappings like the one of Utah teen Elizabeth Smart. See, and Kelsey Close. If these girls had had microchips, they would, this wouldn't have happened. So, yeah, as you can see, I clearly think this is an agenda. This is from an, I guess it was even, was it a study? No. Okay, it's Child Abductions in the Future, to Chip or Not to Chip by Lisa Miller, San Diego County Sheriff's Department, 2008. So this was a while ago. Let's see what our buddy Scott Silverman has to say. Scott Silverman, chief executive officer of Verichip Corporation, a Florida company that makes implantable RFIDs, said his firm has a very strong privacy policy and doesn't oppose bills banning the forced use of the devices. That was double negative. Doesn't oppose bills banning. It's kind of meant to be confusing, I think. Verichip is the first and only company to focus on delivering RFID solutions for people and companies. They currently offer implantable, wearable, and attachable RFID technologies. In 2004, they received approval from the Food and Drug Administration to implant identity chips under the skin of humans. According to their records, they have approximately 5,000 installations worldwide. And this was, what, 2008? This was a while ago. Verichip claims the chip can remain operable in the human body for 20 years. That's terrifying. They have not discovered any device to suggest the chips are toxic. Sorry, evidence to suggest the chips are toxic or cause carcinogenic effects. Yeah, because people just started wearing them, and it's not like you're going to see things right away. The Verichip is an example of an implantable device suitable to locate missing children. Altered to passively broadcast the chip's location in the case of an abduction could be similar in many ways to services now in place to locate stolen vehicles with LoJack, a privately owned organization that assists law enforcement with the technology to monitor a vehicle's movements and subsequent recovery. Why wouldn't everyone want to protect their child in this way? The truth is there are strong sentiments on both sides of the issue.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so it looks like actually Fakeologist.com has done some on this, so I'm going to read a little bit. Okay, so the Elizabeth Smart movie. Oh. The book came out years ago. Now it's movie time. There is nothing in the above interview that convinces me this was real. It was an interview that Elizabeth Smart did with Meredith Vieira. She's so popular. Not a tear in sight, not a blip in her makeup. Don't dare ask her why she didn't run when she could have multiple times. You don't know. You weren't there. I contend that Miss Smart is a LARPer. A Lifetime, note the network the movie was released on. Of course, Lifetime. Actor playing the kidnapped girl victim where anyone, including someone in a rich, intact family home, can be abducted, raped, and maybe murdered. In fact, her whole family are LARPers, getting paid to continue to sell fear all these years later. I am Elizabeth Smart, official trailer. Interesting. Okay, I guess that's all that they wrote. Wow, wonderful article. That really covered so much. So, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like taking the time to really dig super deep into all these cases because just at face value, I see a lot of weirdness going on, especially that they're hyper-focused on and not really any other cases are. And it's just very strange. Now, this got me to also think about JonBenet Ramsey. I'm sure everybody remembers that one, right? Especially if you live in this country, because it was just, oh, People Magazine. And I mean, I remember this growing up, and I always found it so disturbing that, you know, someone would kill this little girl, and why was she all dressed up in makeup and stuff? And it was just very weird. But again, getting us to focus on this event, which is most likely fake and controlled. I'm not saying the girl didn't die. Her parents, kind of like with Madeleine McCann, her parents very well could have just given their daughter up for a sacrifice or for sex slavery or whatever. I don't know. Doesn't surprise me that pieces of shit out there would endanger or murder their children, but why the media obsession on this one girl? Now, some people, I think even Ed Sherini, Dallas Goldbug, or Goldbug, was claiming that JonBenet Ramsey is actually Katy Perry. You know, they just used old pictures. Maybe I could see that, but you know, what is it really about, the whole JonBenet thing? So someone in a comment section on YouTube is claiming that Elizabeth Smart, sorry to jump around, I'll get back to JonBenet in a second. Elizabeth Smart is a bloodline cousin of Marilyn Monroe. Now, I don't have proof for this. We're just going to entertain this theory. They also say Sandy is the name that AOC, Alexandria Cortez, went by prior to her running for office. TMZ is owned by CNN. Yesterday, Will Powder quit Twitter. So, okay, whatever. That's not relevant. Or maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know who that is. So this is an interesting comment as well. I lived in Sandy, Utah when Elizabeth was kidnapped, and I had seen the couple that supposedly took her walking down State Street several times. I've never thought that her kidnapping was a false flag just because I had experienced the couple myself. We hear a lot of this, you know, after these things happen. Why should I believe Jayla H.? Like, because, oh, but I knew somebody that was in that PSYOP and, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it's interesting that she notes that they were dressed like Muslims and the woman had a head wrap. So I'm getting some Sharia vibes for sure. It'll be interesting to see if this supposed, you know, the kidnapper and murderer of Kelsey Close's parents and kidnapper of her will come out to be some like white Sharia guy. More demonization. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. She was 13, ripe for the picking in their minds. Another person, another commenter here says, Elizabeth Smart's father was the key to something not right with the story. Watching him try to show his emotion when he got in front of the news media was so phony. And I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about when it was the supposed event happening. I could not stand watching him act as if he was acting. He was so creepy. It didn't make sense. Let's see if maybe he'll actually beat, what was his name? The father of one of the Sandy Hook children. Oh, crap. What was his name? The guy that's laughing and then he's like, oh, we're live. I'm really sad because I just lost my child. Maybe he'll beat him, you know, in the acting, the crisis actor competition, the Oscars of crisis acting. He might get crisis actor of the year. He might be better than him. Let's see. We will find out. Damn it. It looks like they only have old interview or interviews after she was found. But let's see. She was raped every day, hour and 40 minutes.
parents. What did
she looks like a douchebag. And they're Mormons.
I feel like he is absolutely manipulating our courts to death. And that,
whatever. Okay, we're not going to get to see his brilliant, sad acting.
So yeah, that's just some food for thought. And there's really not any information out there about this stuff really going into depth and sharing, you know, some strong theories. But it just doesn't add up to me. I'm suspicious. So I want to know what you guys think. And I'll be interested to hear what you have to say. So thanks for listening.